What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In the Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. What's up? Welcome back to Amigos. This is your host, Mike Fenoya. Hope you're doing great. As always, we're here on the Osiris Podcast Network, so be sure to check out all of the amazing podcasts here on the network. You can go to OsirisPod.com and at OsirisPod on social media, at M-I-K-E-F-I-N-O-I-A, at Amigos Pod, and yeah, MikeFenoya.com for dates, all that stuff. I am bringing you volume two of the Still Chasing interviews, the full-length interviews that I did that ended up as snippets in my project with Mike Shields, host of Welcome to the Party, Pal, Across the Margin, works on Godwin Evan. Still Chasing, looking back on a quarter century of rabid obsession and chasing of moments provided by the band Phish, where we look back on being fans, being fanatics, and chasing what we love. I interviewed Tom in the summer of 19 when I was getting this, these interviews compiled and together, and we have a very interesting talk. We caught up with each other right in the middle of summer tour, and we have, we go all the way back to the very beginning. Tom shares some incredible, never before heard stories about his friendship with Trey, working with the band, the genesis of his songwriting, some fears he had at certain moments, some enjoyment, some apprehensions, and where it's all gone and what it means now. So it's a great chat, and I can't thank Tom enough for taking the time to talk with me about it. In doing this project, I really wanted to compile a whole bunch of interviews, and I have a lot of them to share with you. That's going to be the next couple weeks of the Amigos podcast are going to be these full-length interviews. So if you haven't gone over and listened, you can find Still Chasing at iTunes, Spotify, again, Osiris, you name it, it's out there. Google it and you'll find it. Here's a quick trailer from the project. Hey, what's up? This is Mike Fenoya. I'm a stand-up comedian, producer for the TV show Impractical Jokers, and host of the podcast Amigos. I'm also helplessly addicted to the band Phish. For over half of my life, I've been freakishly obsessed with this band, the community, and the endless moments they've provided us.
Dude, they're kind of like an inspirational rock band.
Now, at 40 years old, I'm taking a look back at over two decades of obsession to find out what drives this addiction, what makes them so special, and why I happily continue to make this band a priority over family, bills, and obligations. And before you judge me, take a look at yourself. You'd skip work for a fantasy draft or lie to your grandmother for a Walking Dead marathon, so back off. My thing just happens to be live music, freaking out under the lights with 20,000 of my best friends, jumping and celebrating, criticizing, traveling, planning, and partying.
I just saw a woman looking for a kid named Nugget.
Nugget! Still Chasing is a podcast series hosted by myself and my friend, author and podcaster Michael Shields. Together, we dig through our old college trunk and share our perspective on what initially drew us in, what keeps us intrigued, and continues to stoke the fire.
Just was, as you noted, so compelling that we began to organize our lives around it.
Through personal interviews with pivotal members of the community, friends, and forefathers, we not only take a look at ourselves, but we dive into the philosophy and beauty of fanaticism.
For whatever reason, Phish and the way that they play, the way they mix up their shows, was a perfect sort of field to plant a lot of dreams in.
Still Chasing provides a first-person investigation into the mind of a fanatical fan.
It features hilarious behind-the-scenes stories about the band.
Trey pulled up to a tent and got out and opened the zipper of the tent and put his head in and said, "Festival's canceled! Go home!"
Where a love of a band takes you places you never imagined.
And I headed up there with a bunch of friends, and I got the chance to meet and befriend author, counterculture icon, Mary Prankster, Ken Kesey.
Learn why we just can't stop chasing.
I want to keep coming back because I'm feeling a pure sense of happiness and bliss, and nothing can take it from me.
Still Chasing is brought to you by Osiris and is available January 15th wherever podcasts can be heard.
I get chills. It was really fun to make this, and I think you guys will enjoy it if you haven't heard it yet. And for those of you that have and have reached out, I'm so happy that it brings back fond memories. So enjoy this interview with Tom. Come see me live. Again, go to MikeFenoia.com for dates, and look forward to seeing you out on the road, everybody. Peace.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
I appreciate you sitting here with me today.
Absolutely. I hear you're doing an amazing project. I wanted to be part of it.
I'm very happy that you're part of this amazing project that I'm doing here today. Yes, Still Chasing is the name.
Oh, are you still chasing?
I'm still chasing. Are you still chasing?
I'm not sure. I mean, aren't we all always chasing?
We're always chasing something. But today, I am thinking about what we like to chase, and that's the music and the muse and the moments. And you've got a very interesting perspective on our thing, because you are a fan, you are a contributor, and you're someone who produced a lot of information and a lot of you know, creativity that have caused moments that people chase. And
yeah,
when you guys first started recording and writing songs, was there any vision of this level of success or fanaticism? Was that even a thought?
You know, we go so far back where we go to like eighth grade where we started really writing. And I got to say, all throughout that, Trey definitely had, you know, incredibly obsessed with like Jimmy Page and was incredibly obsessed with like Duane Allman and Eric Clapton, and really, I think, saw himself. Oh, and Jerry Garcia, of course, and definitely saw himself in their role on stage, whereas I never ever did. But I was happy to kind of do all I could to propel him to his next project, right, which was as far as I could see. But he definitely did things like I remember going downstairs in his basement. This was after we met after our first year of college. We both got kicked out of our schools and wound up at Mercer County Community College in New Jersey. And we built a recording studio in his dad's basement. So it was like an open door policy, and I would just go there every day when I could. And I knocked on the door one day, and there was nothing, no answer. And so I went in the basement door, and Trey didn't know I was there. And I happened to walk around the corner and saw him bouncing with a guitar with his headphones on. I couldn't hear what he was playing. He was playing also full volume along with whatever he was listening to. And his hair was down to his ass at this point, and his red, stringy, unwashed hair. And he was doing a full bounce, which is like akin to what we see them do now in You Enjoy Myself.
Oh, wow.
Up and down in the mirror 2 times as he was playing. And so this was like, you know, first year out of college before Fish had really even hit. He already knew that he wanted to do that on stage.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. You know, from a stand-up perspective, I remember the fifth time after the first time standing in my room and practicing jokes and almost like pausing for this room full of laughter. And I would picture, you know, these big rooms, and I would be doing these jokes, and I taped myself watching, you know, and I'd go, "So anybody excited for the holidays?" I'd be like, 3, 2, 1, pause. So that was like,
would you make yourself laugh?
I hated myself, Tom. I go back and watch those videos now, and I'm like, what a boob. Thank God nobody was watching. I hope I had the blinds drawn, you know? It was very, it was weird. But so there was that, there are those folks that have that in their mind right away, that like I'm going for it, whatever it may be. I feel like Trey jumping up and down on the trampolines, he would have been happy with that if it was 500 people or 100,000 people.
Yeah, I think so. I think he was going to get what he was going to get, but he was going to try really hard for it no matter what it was.
Yeah.
And he also had like a fanatical protection of his hands thing going on. I think he knew he was going to be a guitarist, and he knew he was going to derive his income from guitar. And so weird stories abound about Trey like getting angry if you disrespect his hands in any way.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Do you remember when George Costanza was a hand model?
Oh yeah.
He was walking around with oven mitts.
That's almost what Trey was like.
That's hilarious. As it all grew and as it, you know, fans started to come on board and this mysticism and this lore became bigger and bigger and larger, were the guys taken aback at all by how big it was getting?
Well, you know, just being not really able to speak for the guys, but speaking for me, just sort of, you know, the real growth was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing. It was like viral or exponential, you'd call it now. But before those terms kind of existed about growth, Phish was doing that, and it was just unreal. And if from the standpoint of someone in a town where Phish played, they'd come back and then they'd play a place twice as big and fill it up, and then next time come back and play a place twice as big as that and fill it up, and it kept happening. It was like from 93 to 98, Phish was just on a rocket ride to the top. And so once you kind of got used to that, the first couple times that happened, that sort of became the normal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like all of a sudden Madison Square Garden, but I'd already seen Boston Garden. And so kind of like where other people who hadn't, you know, been involved for the past 5 years are now saying to me, what the hell, Phish is playing MSG? And I'm like, yeah, dude.
Yeah. And?
Because I was there. Right?
Right. Right. Of course.
Yes.
What do you think that equated to the fact that, you know, because it wasn't FM play, it wasn't MTV, was it moments? Was it people experiencing those holy shit moments and going back and telling all of the kids in their dorms or their brothers? Or
I think I've said this many times, I think Phish has this depth that you can find sort of an infinite depth in analyzing the song itself or analyzing the lyrics or ascribing your own meaning to the song. And in some way, if you do enough work, you finally realize that this is your band and that's your song. And then like you like chasing stuff, you would then chase that song, right? And so then you'll see them 3 or 4 times, and you'll even drive to see them 5 or 6 times, maybe to catch that song or to catch that experience or be with your friends or whatever. So for whatever reason, Phish and the way that they play, the way they mix up their shows was a perfect sort of field to plant a lot of dreams in. And I didn't
beautiful.
Mean to sound corny.
No, that actually is very true. As someone who has planted many a seed in the Phish soil.
Careful, careful.
I know. I
this is PG.
I guess so. Perfectly good.
Okay.
Yes. Did you ever imagine that 3 decades later, things would feel like they're, you know, just getting going and as creative and as exciting as they are right now?
Thanks. No, not really, but we did have a, so again, not being one to predict the future and just being along for the ride every time and writing songs and making myself available to write with Trey whenever I could. We would say this thing to each other, and it actually started with my friend Mark Daubert. We would say many times, but then Trey and I started saying it to each other, that we have to continue writing even through our 80s. So when we're 80, we still wanted to be writing songs together. So back then, 80 was like this, you know, really, really far away place. And now, we're still 25 years from it. I am anyway. But it seems a little closer, and it seems like maybe we're going to be able to make that come true.
Yes. He has to keep his hands safe. That's the
only. You got to keep a lot of bodies safe. Well, his and mine, and his hands.
And
right.
Your brain.
And my
you
brain.
Should be wearing a helmet at all times.
A brain helmet?
A brain helmet.
I don't know what that is, but if you find one, I'll buy it.
It's a hard candy shell. And the beauty of the growth. I'm turning 40. That's part of this project, is that for 25 years of my life, I've been chasing moments, and I'm still chasing. And I have so much fun chasing it, to the point where I think I'm just chasing the moments.
Right.
And being there and experiencing so much happiness and joy with people that I don't know, tolerating things that if it happened to me in normal everyday life, I would freak out. You know, if there was a guy with hair down to his ass shaking and gyrating and dancing barefoot next to me on the R train, I'd probably tase him and call the police. But the fact that I'm at a Phish concert, somehow he's my brother, and right. I really love him. The trust and the forgiveness between the fans and the band. There's a lot of, I've thought about that a lot this tour. There's a lot of trust and a lot of forgiveness. And I think we forgive them. We're all perfectly imperfect.
Yep.
And they forgive us, and we all laugh together and have a good time.
Are you talking strictly like the performance, like the show? If the show doesn't come off quite well, we're willing to forgive, kind of thing? And that's because, as you know, being a comedian who goes on stage and is right on the edge, that the audience appreciates people who put it all out there. And sometimes that shit goes wrong, right?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you know, we forgive because we appreciate the experimental nature of it.
Right.
And, yeah, if, like 20, 30, 40 variables involved, like, you know, is Mike's bass perfect? Is Trey's rig perfect? You know, did he eat something right before he went on stage and he doesn't quite feel well? There's so many little things that could go wrong that, you know, we're willing to forgive. We've all seen shows that are a little off.
Yep.
We've all seen shows that are a little on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's kind of part of the slog, part of what you chase.
Yeah. It's so funny too, because sometimes you hear people go to a concert of a, you know, the Eagles or whoever's playing directly off the album, and they go, oh, well, you know, Don Henley forgot the lyrics to, he forgot a verse.
Tee-hee.
And it's like, who cares? Like, you're mad at him? Like, that's a moment. That's a thing, you know? Like, yep. And that's something where I love that we have the relationship with the band that we actually fee in this summer tour. Trey completely blew it. And we clapped harder than ever. And it's almost like we enjoy the goofs and we enjoy the fun because it's, we're not here to judge.
Right.
And it feels like they're not there to judge us.
Right. No, I agree. I think they are reading the audience a lot as well. And I think the audience has a lot to do with how good a show is. And so, you know, if you flub a lyric and can bring the audience into that joke, that's a way of surpassing that issue, right?
Right.
Whereas if you really internalize it and say, shit, I fucked up and the audience didn't like it, then that's going to go down a bad road and make for a bad show. So, you know, they're 34 years in now, so they know how to handle that stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it. I like watching them overcome weird issues.
Absolutely. And I overcome weird issues every day on stage. last night.
You're overcoming one right now. his name is Tom.
Tom, you're not a weird issue. That should be the next album. You know, it's funny. Last night there was a guy from Holland sitting right in the front row at a show I did.
That's a weird issue.
It was a very weird issue. And he didn't get some of the subtleties and nuances.
Was he like cross-armed frowning at you?
I mean, were you there? Cross-armed frowning. And he was like just rolling his eyes and huffing. And
I don't want to be here.
I had to stop the show. And I was like, are you cool, man? I'm like, is everything okay?
Really?
And I was like, what can I do to make you more comfortable? I go, you know, it's all going to be okay. Like, none of this matters. Yeah. And I really got like existentialist with him.
Really?
And I felt like it opened me up to a whole new vein of potential material.
Did the guy take it as an attack?
No, he loved it.
He did.
Oh, no, I didn't go at him.
No,
I
know.
It was very
You were actually trying to help him.
Yeah. I it's funny because if I was actually just talking about it with David Gans about how if you really want a laugh, we're talking about the confidence of forgiveness and just allowing the Grateful Dead. I mean, they screwed up lyrics left and right. I mean, they were terrible at times, but the band trusted them and it was all. I've seen if you want to laugh, you should Google or YouTube comedians Comedian Destroys Heckler.
Oh.
And there's these videos of comics that are like so proud of like berating and screaming at someone in the crowd who was like talking.
Well, some comedians, that's their brand.
Yeah, but it's I kind of feel like that's
like, who's the old school comedian who's just so mean and like, you know, who am I thinking of? The best heckler by far.
Are you thinking of Dice or Sam Kennison?
No, older than like a generation before me.
Oh, Don Rickles.
Yes.
Oh, he's the best.
He's the best.
Yes. And that's all in love and that's all, you know, but there are guys who, if you watch, it's like, it's sad where like they have no comedic chops, but they're just screaming at someone about their kids or their mother. It's terrible.
Not so much.
No. So what I love is, here's this guy who's visibly uncomfortable. Let's do what we can to like make him comfortable.
You
and
realize opposite heckled
it's just,
him.
It's that I go like the fun, you know, I go like happy
and coddling heckled. Is opposite of heckling. Yeah. You coddle
maybe a
him.
Little bit of sarcasm, a lot of sarcasm.
Nice.
But it's fun. And it's just that like I just want everyone to like me and trust me and know. But sometimes it's not going to go that way.
Yep.
And I end up really eating it. And you got to go, oh, well, there's other shows.
You can't perform when someone's in the front row really disliking the show. Trey's told me stories about that. And I've been that dude. One of my favorite bands is Steely Dan.
Me too.
And I got my friend Ryan got obstructed view seats for a show and complained about it. And as a return to make up for it, they gave him two front row seats to see Steely Dan at the Beacon, and he took me knowing that I love Steely Dan.
Right.
And unfortunately I had, I think, seven shots of tequila prior, and so it wasn't that I was disliking it, it was that I was over liking it. And I'm tall, and I stood up after, and I was sitting right in front of Donald Fagen.
Yep.
And I stood up after every song and I was saying something like wonderful with and clapping with my hands over my head like way too much and yelling at him, wonderful. I don't know why. And after like three of those, he finally just went, okay, and kind of like shushed me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I said to my friend Ryan, am I being a douche? And he goes, yes.
What a great friend. He's like, yeah, as a matter of fact, you are. That is unbelievable.
So that's the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever, isn't it funny when we go to our concerts, when Fish plays, or, you know, the minute, I mean, I've gone, I'd say 80 to 90% of the shows I've been to, the few hundred I've been to, my butt never hits the seat. And I'm up standing the whole time, even during intermission. Maybe I'll lean on the seat in front of me or whatever.
Right.
You go to a Steely Dan concert, you go to a Yacht Rock
They're all
concert, sit-down concerts.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on going to a sit-down concert and kind of,
you know,
chair
you're
dancing?
You know, you're asking a guy who is 15 years older than you, minimum. And I actually like the sit-down concerts. I
do you?
Yes. I can't say that standing up makes it better for me.
No.
You know what I mean?
I like sit-down concerts.
Yeah.
I just think it's fun when...
Because I really listen, and I think I can sort of listen better if there's no distractions around. Although, you know, of course, sometimes the camaraderie is amazing when there's people all dancing and everything. And I've gotten used to it, obviously, with Fish, 420-something shows in. But it's sort of like a breath of fresh air. My wife and I went to Fleetwood Mac, and you can walk all the way out, all the way in. Your seat's there when you get back.
Yeah.
And you can bring two beers full to the brim without spilling a drop. No one jostles you. And it's like, you know, I'm cool with that. I'm thinking, like, what's not to like? Why don't Fish fans sit the fuck down? But they won't.
They won't. Unless they're passing out.
Yeah.
It's funny, my wife and I, so my 40th Steely Dan's playing the Beacon, and my wife wants to bring me to the show for my birthday because we both worship Steely Dan. And it's fun to be able to go and sit and enjoy. But there have been times where I've watched the two worlds collide. Radiohead at Madison Square Garden, everyone was sitting in my section, and one guy was up feeling it.
Yep.
And there became a little bit of
people yell, sit down.
Sit down. And he goes, I paid for my ticket. And it's a little bit of a dicey situation.
Yep.
And being, you know, aficionado of concerts, it's like, I don't know whose side I take here. I kind of want the guy to sit down.
I want the guy to sit down. Yeah. I'm on that side. Sorry, Fish fans.
So you heard it from Tom. Sit down. Do you get nervous for the band or Trey? Do you ever feel nerves for them when, you know, as a buddy?
Now? Not really. I mean, I think I was nervous earlier, and you know what I'm talking about, because it kind of felt like something was going to be taken from us artificially.
Yeah.
And I mean, that can always happen if there's a disaster or something, but this was a preventable thing that all of a sudden, like, I felt like my friend was going to be taken from me or the band was going to be taken from me.
Yeah.
For no real good reason. And, so then I was very nervous. Now I'm not, and I know most of my friends and Trey's family and everyone is like a big sigh kind of relief. And I don't think anyone's nervous anymore.
That's good.
Yep.
And there's that time leading up to it where 10,000 pounds are lifted off your shoulders when, you know, whether it's an arrest or whether it's some type of life change, a divorce, or I've seen it happen in my life where you go, I'm really happy that this happened before something even worse.
Yeah,
happened
for sure. Absolutely. There was definitely that. But I mean, everyone's kind of so happy now. They got this second act, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm beyond thrilled about.
When you're in the crowd and they come on stage, do you get those butterflies for them?
Definitely. Camden Night 3, this last tour, they opened with Camel Walk, and that opening, the beginning, is just like goosebumps. Like, whatever they're doing, Mike and Trey and Paige, it's just, it's beautiful. And I remember, like, my daughter next to me and my wife on the other side, like, the hair really standing up on my arm, like, wow, I haven't had that in a while.
Yeah.
Because it was so good. And then the rest of that concert,
it was the best.
Just kept going.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Beautiful show. My favorite of the tour.
Me too. Absolutely. And I think it was so wonderful.
I saw 12, by the way.
12?
Yeah.
Yeah, you beat me by, two.
Oh, cool.
So, well, I'm going to Dick's. Are you going to Dick's?
I am. Yes.
Awesome. That'll be fun. I'm happy that you beat me. You should be beating me, Tom. are you personally taken aback by the size of it all now? How big it's gotten?
No, like I said before, you know, that the growth earlier was when I was sort of surprised. But now, you know, just being part of it and having... I mean, every now and then I look out at the audience and just like tap who's next to me and just say, holy shit, look at that.
Yeah.
Just everyone there smiling and just incredibly happy. So yeah, that never gets old and never doesn't surprise. But no, I think I've just because of, you know, being along with them as they expanded and exploded, I'm not that super duper surprised by it anymore.
Yeah. I feel like I've grown up with the band. I started seeing them when I was 15 in 1995, and they were about 12 years in at that point. I had an oh shit moment. I have been thinking about this quite a bit. I feel like we all have our oh shit, like this, my life is going to revolve around this band. And whether it was Deadheads, whether it's Game of Thrones fans, whether it's MMA people, we all have these holy shit moments. And for me, it was Clifford Ball. That was my second concert,
wow.
Second Fish concert.
What a wild second concert.
Tom, I've never admitted this to anyone, and I'm embarrassed to admit it. I was in the medical tent with a stomach ache because I missed my mom, and I missed my family, and I thought I was scared, and I didn't.
I think this is a joke. You're leading up to a joke, right?
It's not.
No,
I was at Clifford Ball, and I was 15, going on 16,
oh,
I think.
Wow.
And we drove up, and I had no idea. I'd never left Connecticut.
Really? So you were nervous and homesick.
I was nervous, and I was scared. I was like, "What's going to happen? There's all these people," and I think it was like my first bout of like adult anxiety.
Oh.
And I was in the medical tent, and I was. Like, where's a payphone? How do I call home? Because there was no cell phones. And they came out, and the first notes of Chalk Dust, there was a little bit of feedback, and then Chalk Dust hit. And I go, I'm fine. And I got up out of the like seat I was in, and I bolted somehow in the sea of whatever, 80,000 people.
Meanwhile, they were airlifting your mom in to save you.
My mom has rosaries in both hands. She's like, something feels wrong. She's dipping garlic and olive oil like 6 hours south. But I had this moment of like, it's all going to be okay. And I ran through a million pockets of my friends. As I was trying to find my friends, I had a moment that like, there's more of us than just us. And it created this moment of like, I could trust this band and I know that everything's going to be okay.
Yep.
But that's the first of 10 epic festivals that have really changed everything. And what's your recollection of like moments leading up to, hey, we're going to build a city in upstate New York?
So I had the amazing luck to be an insider in the formative days of those fish festivals. I've gone to every one. I haven't missed a festival, but the first one, Clifford Ball in particular, and also Great Went to some extent, were amazing because Trey was kind of like my personal host and the host to like my friends. And he drove me and my pals around the whole compound on golf carts.
Oh, wow.
And this was like giving us a tour the day before the gates open. And even the day of the gates opening, we drove all around with Trey driving and narrating and explaining the decisions that they made and the art and the stuff.
No kidding.
And yeah, so he was proud to see his concept come to life. I mean, I give him and the band and the artists who realized the idea and the manager, John Paluska, very much so, and Dickie and Beth and Brad, a lot of credit for really getting the first one so perfect that other bands and festivals used it as a template. That first festival created a lot of fortunes and a lot of other festivals.
It sure did.
Yeah, you don't know that, like, I think the New York Times just mentioned that was sort of the one that started, like, even Bonnaroo.
Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and a lot of the same people from there were like, oh, this is how we should do it.
Absolutely. That's 100% true. And, you know, it's something happened to me at a very early on level. The only one I skipped was the Great Went, and I had to choose between Darien Lake or Great Went, and I met Ken Kesey at Darien Lake.
So that's a good decision.
It was a good decision, and we ended up becoming close friends.
Oh, wow.
And he became a mentor to me in undergrad, and I flew out to Eugene, Oregon, and I interviewed him for my senior thesis in college, and it turned out to be the final interview of his life.
Wow.
And it completely changed my life, and I have Fish to thank for it.
Wow.
And what's beautiful is that I ended up going to the first Bonnaroo as a writer for Relics magazine because I published my Kesey interview in Relics. And I remember people walking around going, oh my God, look at what they did. This is beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, Fish did it. Fish has already done it. I'm like, Lemon Wheel, Oswego, you know, at that point up to the, yeah, before the first Bonnaroo and Clifford Ball. And for this band to build us a safe place to just be ourselves with our buddies and meet groups of other, I've said this before, I have a Dave, a Doug, a Todd, a Chris. Every town had, I met like Amherst, Mass's Todd and, you know, right. Chicago's Chris. And
right.
We were all like, oh man, there's more of us. Cause this was kind of yeah. pre
right.
all the internet.
You don't get that at the normal shows.
Right.
This was like everyone from the nation traveling to see their favorite band.
Yeah.
And it was really just unbelievable.
It was just such an and being such an impressionable young. I mean, I was a teenager,
right?
And my whole life was ahead of me, and I thought, I don't want there to be any other. I this music has to be the soundtrack, and they provided me with experiences to travel around the country.
Yep,
and really kind of learn responsibility, get a job in the beginning of the summer, cut lawns, save my cash, get on the road. Make grilled cheese in the parking lot, the whole nine.
Perfect. Forget about your feelings about your mom and your family. Just think about Fish.
Just think about Fish. That's it. Mom's fine.
Yeah.
Mom can wait. I had a beeper then, so it was okay. She could get in touch. Was there thoughts early on where it's like, hey, I think we're going to put together this big festival, and everyone was kind of like, ugh.
You see, I don't know like the stuff that kind of went into it. You know, Trey... at the time and now, I imagine as well, although I'm not on the bus as much, but the bus, when it was all four members, now they have like their own buses and their families are on them. And it's not the same as it was when it was the manager or the road manager, Brad,
yep.
The four band members, and then sometimes a guest. And that guest was like the new meat. And they were hungry, and they were all comedians, and it was just searingly, they would shred you for like a day.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
No kidding?
But it was, yeah, oh no, absolutely. I mean, they're all just brutal, and it was funny as hell and amazing. And once you endured that and get through it, then they do stuff like they were very into chess, you know,
yes.
Uncharacteristically,
yeah.
And we played chess a lot. Paige was among the best of them. And he and I often squared off and played. It was really cool because I had a chess club as well.
Really?
Nerdy as that sounds, back at home. And but what I was going to say was the bus was the fertile ground for ideas, like, you know, the ones that eventually became the festivals or became, you know, Baker's Dozen and that stuff. And it's basically them bantering, coming up with something a little outrageous. And the ones that stick were the ones that kind of kept whirling around, I think, in largely in Trey's brain.
Yeah.
That he, you know, then after, you know, it passed the band test and passed, you know, for multiple days past the band test and people keep talking about it, then I think he would kind of kick it upstairs like, hey, John, why don't we, and that's Paluska, why don't we try to do this? Could it work? And, you know, then John would start applying his business mind to it.
Yep.
And thank God it worked.
Thank God it worked. I bet that equates to the New Year's Eve stuff as well. You know?
No question. Every one of those pranks, I feel, is hatched that same way.
Yeah. Big Cypress, this is the 20-year anniversary. And I mean, that was something that combined the two. It was a festival and it was New Year's Eve. And that was amazing. And it was just to watch the bikes turning and the clock and all the gears. It's just something that, to me, will stand out as, I mean, Clifford Ball was the one, but there are moments at all the festivals that really were kind of, I can't believe the band goes through this much trouble to make us happy. And I remember that our intent is your delight.
Our intent is for your, is all for your delight.
Our intent is all for your delight.
Yes.
Is that banner hanging over the,
Clifford Ball entrance.
The Clifford Ball entrance.
Yeah.
And that was such a, just welcome.
Yeah.
Just come on in.
Plus, Clifford Ball was the name of a guy, like an aviator.
Yeah.
It was very strange.
So goofy.
So that was the Clifford Ball, like a ball.
The ball.
That guy's name.
It was the first of Clifford. The balls. Were they completely blown away by their...
Oh, yeah.
Like, by the festival?
Totally. I mean, like I said, Trey was like a little kid driving us around. And I have two stories I'll share. And I don't know if I've shared these yet. So, One, just amazing shit to make us laugh. And one of them was, and this was probably, I mean, clearly after people had come in and started setting up camping and stuff, we were driving down the runway and we came up upon this field of tents and it was late, I think, you know, 2 or 3, and most people were asleep. And Trey pulled up to a tent and got out and opened the zipper of the tent and put his head in and said, "Festival's canceled. Go home." And me and my friend Tebow, we were laughing so hard. We probably pissed our pants. We were laughing so unbelievably hard we couldn't breathe. And then he did it again, and we drove a little bit further, and he was laughing too. We were crying laughing. It was just ridiculous. He was doing that kind of thing.
I hope there's one guy that hears this and he goes, "Motherfucker, yeah, it wasn't canceled."
I keep thinking about that. Like, imagine being that guy and Trace. I don't think anyone actually went home, but imagine still being the one that gets woken up by Trey screaming.
That's one of those Bill Murray moments where I've heard that he goes into like a bathroom where someone's at a urinal and he'll cover their eyes and he'll go, "No one's ever going to believe you." And then just walks away because that guy's going to walk out of the bathroom and go, Bill Murray was just in there. And there's
when I was
no
pissing. One. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Another one was Trey. And this is pretty funny. And, you know, 20 years have gone by or more, so I don't think he can get in trouble anymore about this, so I'll tell this one. But we drove up to the Ferris wheel, and this was, you know, the first festival, so the Ferris wheel was still an object of amazement.
Yeah.
And it had been sort of like semi-retired for the evening, and again, this was late. And Trey's like, "Hey, come on, we'll start it up." I'm like, "Oh, shit, are you sure we should start?" So he kind of like looked, and there's wires, and went up to a generator that was attached to it and just pressed go, and the generator started up.
Oh,
so this is a big diesel motherfucking generator, and that cranked up. Then the lights and stuff came on for the Ferris wheel, but, you know, there's like gears and stuff whirling underground, and under the platform, and we were standing on the platform, and then Trey grabbed the control, is basically like this big gear shift.
Sure.
And so he yanked the gear shift, and there's like a clashing. I think there might be a clutch that he didn't use, and there's like a clashing of sound, and the entire wheel lurched about a foot it just moved forward about a foot and then like hit some barrier. It was like boom, and the whole thing shook, and we were like, what the fuck, let's get out of here. And we just left with the generator running, and we were again cracking up.
That's so incredible. Yeah. What a goof.
But Trey's like, I was like, are you gonna get in trouble? And he's like, no, I own this place.
That's amazing. I own this place. What a hilarious, see, the Italian never leaves. He's like hippie, I own this place, this is my place. That's so awesome.
Yep, it was
such amazing. A good friend, huh? It must,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that's, it's so beautiful to, yeah, see, like, that's the thing that I think is really awesome too. Every now and then, like, we all have these inner dialogues and inner monologues during shows, and it's, you know, sometimes I think what we're all looking for is just, I hope they know how much we love them.
Yeah.
And I hope that they feel it, and we feel it, and
we know they do.
Yeah.
They do. No question.
Can you describe the feeling when your lyrics are matched with a tune and you hear it live for the first time?
The feeling is complex, and it's probably simple answer, no, I cannot. But but I will tell you my song birth cycle observation over the years. And so as a lyricist, I see my poems. My song creations have three distinct births. The first one is when I write it down, right? It goes from my head to becoming a thing.
Yep.
So that's birth number one. And then the second birth is when that becomes a song. So like I either give those lyrics to Trey and he writes a song from it, or he and I write a song together, or I come up with a, you know, a tune for it on the piano or whatever. And that's, so that's the, now that becomes the song demo, as we call them. So that's been born. So now that project that I started from my head now has been born twice. And then the third birth is if that demo becomes a Fish song and they put it on an album or play it live. So by the time a new tune is played, we've been with it for some time,
yeah,
you know, nursed it through two lives and into a third. So I'm usually aching to hear it by the time, you know, by the time I see it, and I'm very excited to hear if people receive it well.
And when you have that feeling of, you know, there are songs that you have written that have been with the band for, you know, decades now, and you see people, that's their song.
Yeah. And that's an amazing
And the
thing.
Release that they have, and you're in the crowd.
Yeah.
Now, let's say there's one that, you know, pick any of them and they, you know, play it and you look around. What is that feeling like for you?
Oh, geez. There was a period where I was sort of self-conscious about songs, whether people are extremely liking them that I've written or extremely possibly not. Like, I always sort of for a while felt like eyes on me or something in a way, but I don't now. I'm just like another audience member, and I've gotten over any sort of like issue like that. But I will say it's amazing. Like, you know, Waste is one I always think about, where it's just generally loved, and so many people have come up to me and told me they use it as their wedding song, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That never gets old, or bouncing around the room, hearing every single person in there singing it,
yeah,
as it's, you know, that, and I woke, that fills a room with volume because, you know, you have to sing loud to hit that note.
Yeah.
And it's loud always. And it's just, you know, again, goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I'll have to thank you personally for this, and it's not a joke, even though you think everything I say is a joke, Tom.
He's setting me up for a joke, guys.
No.
Wait for the punchline.
Keep waiting. Still waiting. I was dating a girl, and we were drunk, and I was sitting on her steps, and I opened up the trunk to my red 99 Saturn, and she said, "You play guitar?" And then there's my acoustic guitar sitting there. And I go, "Yeah." And I go, "You know, actually, I wrote you a song." And she was like, "You did?" And I sat on her front steps and I played Waste.
Wow.
And I go, "I'm sorry. I'm getting a little bit emotional right now." Like, I was like getting, like, really hamming it up.
Did I get you laid?
For the first time with her. Yes. Yes. So thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate it.
And then I
brought her to Saratoga and they played Waste.
Oh.
And she poured like
the rest of her water. She had like a lemonade and she like just tossed it in my face. And I go, what? You wrote that for me? You son of a bitch. And I was like, no, I thought it was such a good song. I mailed it to Fish and they learned it. And I told them you were coming. And she's like, you're such an asshole. But yeah, that ended up, I mean, thank you. That was a fun.
Did that end the relationship or she? Did you guys survive that?
Other things ended the relationship. Okay. But okay. No, it was a laugh.
That's hilarious.
And she got a good kick out of it. But it's
amazing.
But it's like, you know what though? It's also one of those things where it's like, if there's things that we have such like a passion about, every like them knowing how much we care, that like I feel like if I ever ran into Fishman or whoever and got to tell him that story, he'd be like, that a boy. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. But
it's kind of really amazing.
No question.
You know, this is called Still Chasing, this project, and I think about how we all, anyone who's fascinated by anything, their muse, the thing that gets them off, we're always chasing moments. And Fish fans, I think, collectively will admit that that's why we keep going. Some people hop off. Some people stay on. Some people come back. What moments are you chasing now as a friend, as a fan? Now when you go to shows, are there songs? Are there moments? Are there experiences? Are there handshakes? Like what?
I often say that I do like to kind of clear my mind and not be expecting anything before a Fish show. But of course, if Trey and I have written, you know, a batch of songs, I want to see those. I want to see the new songs. I always want to see like the new one that everyone's talking about, like a Ruby Waves or whatever the newest, I'm always chasing a Mercury. These days I'm chasing Thread, which I feel is going to become something.
Yeah.
I feel the band is sort of sanding off some rough edges of Thread and it might turn into something. And as you know, Mike, because you heard me say it,
yeah,
because of Osiris,
yeah,
that's part two of a trilogy.
Right.
Steam, Thread, Epitaph. And no one's heard Epitaph yet. But so I chase things that I feel like I haven't heard enough, I guess. But I also chase shows. Like I chase the really amazing, like we all do, we're all looking for that incredible Alpine Night 3 show.
Yeah.
And to me, when there's banter, when Trey is talking playfully to the other members and they're laughing and they're also playing really well, that's a hallmark and a tell that the show is going to be epic.
Yes, absolutely.
And so when there's banter and Trey's openly laughing and talking to the guys early on and they're nailing it, stick around.
That's right.
Don't leave early.
Yes, absolutely. It's so true. Don't leave early is right. And I think one of the things I've noticed that I'm chasing lately is the moments with the people I'm with. It transcending the band and
nice.
It's looking to my left and looking to my right and realizing that I've stayed friends with these guys since I was 15.
That's amazing.
Because of this band.
Right.
And I hope
I can make and break a show is who you're with.
A 1,000,000%.
Yep.
1,000,000%, which to be honest, it's funny, Las Vegas, I did all four nights alone. And it's funny that you say that because like being alone at a show can make or break the show as well.
Yes.
Because like you want to turn around and high five somebody halfway through Split Open, but also it's kind of cool that you don't have to deal with dragging a weekend warrior that kind of overdid it with the IPAs in the parking lot, and, you know?
Yep. Yep.
But being there with family, being there with, you know, the people that you love, it's very important.
Yep.
Do you ever have fans in mind when writing your lyrics or writing poetry?
Rarely. I think I kind of write it for myself, but I mean, there's a few exceptions like Down With Disease, 1,000 Barefoot Children Outside Dancing On My Lawn, I think is a reference to Fish fans like in a field. Also possibly Birds of a Feather. They're flocking outside.
Yeah.
What could they be? Yeah. Probably the fans, I guess. But no, I would say, pretty much it's whatever the muse wants me to write about at that moment.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's often about the fans.
Okay. Did I tell you that? I think I texted you that I had a dream where I ran into you walking. I was hiking and you were sitting at a stream writing a song called Wolves.
Oh yeah.
Did I tell you about
this? Yeah, and I wrote down what you had said and I still plan to make it into a song.
Get out of here.
Well, because if the dream world, you know, transmitted that to you in detail, who am I not to listen to that?
It's interesting because I wrote that down too, and because you wrote As a matter of fact, I do remember now because you said follow the muse.
Yes.
And I've been thinking about it and I wrote down because it was a pretty neat, you were very into it. And it was like, you had this like, ooh, like follow the path, like yeah. follow the path.
You have to follow the muse.
Yes.
You have to listen to the muse.
I think about that from comedy as well too. And there's a lot of things that I've learned as a performer from the band, and you're a performer. And when you're up there and you're doing what you're doing, there are some comics who need that setup punch bang onto the next thing. And if the lighting is wrong or if somebody drops a tray of drinks or they get all tossed off their axis and it's like, ah, this is blown. The moment's blown. And I love those moments. I thrive on those weird
but
moments.
I can see how getting your punchline chopped off.
Oh, of course. I'm not saying I'm some, right. you know, Buddhist with, right. you know, I freak out at times. You know, the Grateful Dead said that they always blew it at the big moments. Like Woodstock was a mess and all that Saturday Night Live and all right. this. And I think about that sometimes with comedy where it's like if I need to get like a nice tight 5 minutes,
yeah.
sometimes that's hard.
Right.
But if I can like go up and you've saw me at the Cellar where I love to riff and yep. play and yeah. have a good time.
No, you're very comfortable on stage.
I really do believe I learned that from them.
Oh, cool.
I think it was like just the moment of being able to like, it's okay.
That's a big compliment.
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
awesome.
What is it about the relationship between a Phish fan and the band that seems so unique and personal?
We kind of touched on this before. I think it's the common respect. I think it's like the fans expect a phenomenal experience from the band. And I think the band expects them to expect it.
Right.
And I think that's the tie. That's the bond
yeah.
in a very simple stated way.
As a follow-up to that, I think about the confidence that the band has and what other band goes on stage at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City. Everyone's expecting them to play, you know, Led Zeppelin or whatever cover album. And they come out and they play an entirely never before heard suite of songs that is going to become a new album.
Right.
And throw in Abe Vigoda in a wombat suit. I mean,
yeah, it was very brave. I think, you know, in many ways they had established the precedent that the fans, you know, possibly even bought tickets to witness. And so surprising them and depriving them from what they were expecting. Even though you and I know, having seen Phish many times, you always have to expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's the normal with Phish is the unexpected.
Yeah.
But some fans, I think, weren't like loving it. Kind of like, wait, this is not a classic album. And I'm like, well, just wait 20 years.
Yeah.
It's classic now.
It's very true.
They did play a classic album. It's just not classic right now. But I felt there was one song in particular that fans kind of almost were laughing at. Do you remember Jack and Jill?
Yes.
It's a song that didn't really make it. Although that version is actually really beautiful. And I think it's just Trey and Paige. I think it's just two of them.
Yeah.
And I really actually loved it. There's a couple like belly flop songs, you know, in my past. That's probably one of them. Maybe Friday. I remember Trey played it as an encore once. And, I think the entire audience walked out. That may have been at the Mann Music Center. I'm not even kidding. It was like a great show. And then suddenly that was the encore and people were like, WTF. And then another one, but to me, not meant to be a song, more like meant to be a joke always, was Jennifer Dances. But I think the way Trey presented it to the audience was like, hey, check out our new song. And like people over, they really, really hated that one. And I remember that was like when the internet, you know, trolls and haters were just a new thing. And they came out en masse.
In droves.
About that one.
The infestation.
Yeah. And that's when I like had to learn to get a real, really hard shell. I have a hard shell now. I'm fine. You don't like Jennifer Dances? I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Now back off.
Yeah.
And then Kasva Vox, they come out and they
right. Again, brave.
Right?
Because of the reaction, mixed reaction, I'd say, you have to say. But anyway, since they kind of tried it before, coming out with Kasva Vox was, again, extremely brave. No one had ever heard it. It's a brand new experiment.
Yep.
And that one, to me, was universally incredibly well received.
Right.
Possibly because of the extra effort they went to with the amazing stage show and all that stuff.
and even like hiding, somehow digging into the internet and putting old album reviews.
Oh, yeah, seeding the internet with some crazy misinformation.
How on earth do you even take the time? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I was about to go on stage at the Comedy Cellar in Vegas, and I'm looking at my phone, and they're like, I'm like, Scandinavian. I'm like, son of a bitch. I'm like, are they really going to do this? Are they really going to play some weird? And I'm like, I'm not going to know the language. And I was like mad about it. And then I went in and it was them. And I'm like, oh, you guys are, you know, trick me once. The family that you're a part of, the Fish community, your family, the fact that you all have had, you know, it's great to see you and your family at shows together, enjoying it, and I've gotten a chance to hang out with everybody together.
Yeah, my kids have grown up with Fish.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. My daughter's been to 60-something shows, and she's the true Fish head. My son, not as much, but he's been to his share, probably 20-something. And getting to the point where it just actually got to the point where this tour, she went to shows without me.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like... That was a departure from the norm, which was interesting.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Before we depart, one thing that I think is amazing that, you know, in chatting with other people for this project, you know, the Grateful Dead kind of realized when the internet was happening that there were a couple of people that were like, wow, we can talk about the show. We don't talk a lot during the show. So let's go online and talk about the show. And there were all these different outlets and avenues that formed. Osiris Podcast Network is now a very, you know, large and successful outfit of podcasts, one that I have a podcast on as well as you.
Right.
And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the community outside of the walls of the concert.
Sure.
And
yeah, there's all these forums, lots of forums to discuss music. Osiris is sort of a gathering of those. You're right. Yeah. Lots of music podcasts. I think we have 30 now, and we're definitely jam band focused, but we're trying to expand out of that at the moment. We're getting into a little bluegrass, getting into you know, other genres of music, possibly into some hard or classic rock, and even elsewhere. There's experimental tendrils reaching out from the jam band centric stuff that we, you know, that's what RJ, the co-founder, and I know very well, Fish being our favorite band. And so it makes sense that that's how we started, but we are growing up as well.
Yes. I heard that there's even a comedian that has a podcast on that network.
Yes. The famous Mike Fenoya, Amigos podcast. I've been on it before and I'm honored to be kind of on it now. This isn't it though, right? This is something else.
No, this is it. This is a different, this is going to be an Osiris joint, but it's going to be much different.
Did you tell the people at Osiris about it?
One of them, drunk at Tonewood.
Did he say yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless the other guy says no. If there's anything that you could say to the fans that, you know, I mean, obviously we're talking Fish constantly. We're talking different things. But in this project, this may, you know, people who don't necessarily listen to Fish might hear this. So is there anything that you would like to say?
I can only say just from my experiences that I've gone overly deep into Fish, right? To the, at the expense of seeing other music. I mean, no question. And then there's people that I admire, like Trey, for example, who sees new music all the time and listens to new music and listens to other people's influences and changes his listening habits. Mine, year to year, it's exactly the same. It's like Fish and then a handful of other things.
Yeah.
And those things have been the same since high school, pretty much, which is not a way of growing. However, my growth is sort of comes from weird ideas in my head that manifest and become music. But I think that I would say expand your horizon, listen to lots of music. That would be my message to a young fan right now. Don't dig too deep into Fish.
Yeah.
I mean, dig deep, but dig elsewhere too.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. And it was a pleasure to be here. And I like the idea of your project. I was just kidding. I think it's a very ambitious one.